So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
And we are ready for a long-awaited matchup, a very intriguing matchup between two of the hardest-hitting men in wrestling. Very different styles, though. It's Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher. At this time, I'm joined by Eddie Kingston and CM Punk.
I love the main event atmosphere here right now. Eddie Kingston, tell me about it.
They don't need a referee.
Here we go!
Who needs a rope?
That's what the people came to see!
Necro hits the ropes!
Oh, he's
a Gary upside the head of the Necro Butcher, sends him to the floor!
Knocked him right down, there's a back!
Oh, power slam on the floor!
How do you power slam, buddy? Some power slam somebody on their forehead!
As if he didn't already fuck him up earlier in the match. They want to see more fucking up going on here in Philadelphia! Oh.
Somebody!
Did you see the sweat foot? Holy shit!
Ah! Holy fuck!
That was an exploder or just a fuck you? You're going over next up.
Bunko. What the fuck? Zach, this is nuts.
And that's it. Samoa Joe gets the knockout.
It's Review Away, John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Yeah, doing all right.
We're joined by a guest today.
Oh, we are. Oh, geez.
Look who's here.
Hi!
Oh, where did you come from?
I'm surprised. I was hiding here. You guys just both seem so tired, and now I'm here to
We came in this morning, and here in a sleeping bag on the floor was Damian Abraham.
My wife threw me out. The kids threw me out, so now I'm here.
Yeah, just
living in the Fight Network.
He was here. He had, like, this morning breath, and he was clutching a DVD of IWA Mid-South Something to Prove.
Mm-hmm. I was clutching to the YouTube link for the Nirvana mashup to the highlights of the Joe versus Necro Butcher match. That's like my favorite YouTube video ever. But we'll get into that.
We appreciate you coming back because it seems like the rest of the wrestling podcast world is starting to get into Damian Abraham, the guy I want to say that we claimed ownership of.
Absolutely.
From the first day.
We discovered
and now others, much like Nate Milton, has now gone on to do his own stuff. Don't forget who's creating the stars in the wrestling podcast world, because it's us.
And I like to think that the only reason I of course you're talking about the fact that I was on MLW, Conan and Court Bauer and
never heard of them.
Exactly. Your compatriot. And the only reason I know about MLW, though, I've listened since the very first episode, was because of The Law. You had Court on to promote it ahead of the release of the first MLW episode, before Conan was on or anything. And I was like, I love The Law.
I was pushing them to have you on because, from a selfish standpoint, I just wanted to hear you and Conan together talk about anything.
Oh, we
I think it was a match made in heaven.
It was like perfect. Like I'd listened to the show so much, so I knew every like sort of beat that I wanted to hit on with them, and I think I got most of them done.
What did you refer to him as? Your new cannabud?
My new cannabud. Yeah, my canna buddy. My new canna buddy. I thought now, because you guys have two shirts, right? You need to name your fans. Because, like, the Beliebers, the Directioneers, you know?
Do you have a name for that you can give us?
Yep.
He's already thought of it.
He already has the Alcopolics.
Well, that's a – okay. That's better than mine. Mine was just the Pollax, but the Tingalings.
The Tingalings.
I don't know.
Oh, that. Man.
That's amazing. Chingaling is like
– I picture, like, all these children dancing down some, like, golden pathway – to Wei Ting playing the flute.
Well, that's the Alcopolics is that's way worse.
The Alcopolics and the Tingalings.
Alcopolics is great. Tingalings is not so. I feel dirty even saying it out of my mouth.
No, because Chingaling isn't Chingaling a beer or something.
Okay, but what isn't
a Tsing Tao is a beer.
Tsing Tao is definitely a beer.
It makes me think of Dingaling. Okay,
and see that's Ding-a-ling. You immediately go to Wiener. We're not saying.
I mean, that's what everybody thinks.
No, I think when I think of Tingalings. A loyal group of followers.
Yes.
Ready
yes.
to
You're
raise
the
up
Piper
and
of the Tingalings.
Do
rise,
your bidding.
Rise, my Tingalings.
Rise, my Tingalings. I think it's awesome.
See, that's there's a double.
I know, but I think it's awesome because you've got such a dry sense of humor, and it's just so sharply contrasted it.
Yeah, you never address the Tingalings in some kind of goofy manner. It's always serious.
Very serious.
Attention, Tingalings.
Attention, my Tingalings.
There will be a show this afternoon. At 1,400 hours.
Oh, thank you for the suggestion. I'll put that in the.
That's a great idea.
Back pocket.
That's a great idea.
It's about it's the King of the Fish of names of fans. Mm-hmm. I think it's the one one that you guys don't like that grows.
What are your fans called?
Fuckheads was the original name for them.
Fuckheads.
Yeah, we
simple to the point.
Well, I remember our very first tour of America. There was like four kids. Sorry, one of them's name is Tall Rob. We're still friends with Tall Rob to this day. But they followed us to every show practically, and we're like, "Wow, you guys are following us around. You guys are the Fuckheads." They were not stoked on that name, but I gave them free records, so they were stoked on that. So I bought them off with the free records. So yeah, Tingalings is way better than Fuckheads.
Mm,
would you rather be a Tingaling or a Fuckhead? John?
I don't know.
A Fuckting.
Oh.
Would that be a combination fan of both of yours?
I think I would call and if you're just like a Damien fan, you'd be an Abrahammer.
An Abrahammer.
I like
that's,
that.
That's really good.
Abrahammer's
or an Abra-jammer.
Cool.
I like the Abrahammer.
I know the Abrahammer,
much more clean,
but
rolls off the tongue a bit better.
I kind of think there's probably like a Jewish student union group called the Abrahammers already.
The Abrahammers.
Where I don't think there's an Abra-jammers.
Abrahammers.
Or like a communist Jewish group.
Or a communist Jewish group.
Yeah.
I have a. You were playing a show on this past Sunday. Were you?
I played
not?
A show. It feels like just yesterday I played this show because I'm really sore. It was a few days ago. I know. It feels like just yesterday though. But I've been playing shows every day this week.
This was the downtown Toronto event.
Event.
Field day?
We played Field Trip.
Field Trip.
Field Day is a festival in England though, John. Very up on your indie rock festivals. Look at this
guy. I confuse the two all the time.
I know. That's a problem when you just have them both on your brain constantly.
Now, did you do a bit on the stage where you spoke to the crowd during this Field Trip event?
I always speak to the crowd.
Because I saw you tweet that you were about to go on stage.
Yeah.
And, of course, because I live downtown, I got to hear this concert. I got to hear every rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
I got to hear every sound check for 3 days straight. And I swear I heard you not 40 minutes after you tweeted this. I'm like, that was Damien's laugh. And that was his voice that I could hear from my condo.
Where did you guys play? Where was that?
We played at Fort York.
Oh, okay.
If you were downtown,
close.
This is all you could hear.
And we were on the Fort York. I guarantee you would have heard me at that point.
That is a distinguishable voice, and even more so the laugh.
In our defense, John, we never sound checked. So you didn't have to suffer through
I got
us.
That at like 10 in the morning. Yeah. Let's sound check for the whole downtown core to hear us.
That seems like something Broken Social Scene would do, not fucked up.
I listened, actually, to the whole Broken Social Scene set.
You
from
could
my,
hear it from your balcony.
Perfectly.
Wow, that's
perfect.
So loud. And that's why they cut it at 11.
Who's the guy now that plays with Broken Social Scene? I'm not up on the...
No, it's still Kevin Drew. Still...
It's always been him?
Still former WWF PA Kevin Drew.
Former WWF PA.
He was a production assistant for WWE Canada back in when they had that Canadian office. Was it Tunney that ran the Canadian office? Or
Carl DeMarco.
Carl DeMarco. DeMarco. Yeah, he worked for Carl DeMarco, and he had like a funny – he had all these funny stories. I remember him telling me one story. He was like running full speed down the hall as fast as he can go, and he just, bam, runs right into The Rock. And The Rock's with some sort of WWE handler who starts screaming at Kevin. But Kevin's, like, running because he has to. And The Rock's like, hey, cool it. And turns to Kevin. He's like, you okay, man? And then, like, Kevin's like, yeah. He's like, okay, go on. Wow. And, like, lets Kevin go. So, and he also has this other story where he's in the room, he's eating in the cafeteria or the, I guess, catering area, and or catering, because it was in the when they would do their Toronto shows, and he felt all the life get sucked out of the room, and everyone just gets super awkward, and then in walked Vince McMahon.
Oh, yeah.
No, boy. He didn't run into him, did he?
No, well, I think that was his, the extent of his run-ins was to The Rock, which I guess you pick. If you pick someone to run into physically in WWE, Bob Holly was there at that time. He would have fucking fucked you up.
Yeah, yeah. Don't run into Hardcore Holly, and don't get a parking ticket if you take his car rental, as Rene Dupree found out firsthand.
What happened?
The two had a rental car of some sort. It was under Holly's name, and Dupree, I guess, was going to return the car and got either a parking ticket or a speeding ticket that he never paid and went to Hardcore Holly's, I guess they contacted his insurance. So Hardcore Holly literally got a receipt when they had their next house show match together. It's a very famous story between these two.
So, wow. For a minute there, I thought you meant Renee Young. And I'm like, what did they do to poor Renee Paquette? Hardcore Holly, why are they riding together, too? What a weird combination. But, I, of course, now I remember Rene Dupree.
Yes.
He was in New Japan for a minute, right?
He was over, not with New Japan. He was with, I want to say, 01.
Oh, 01. Okay.
I think so.
But I digress. How are you guys doing? I know exactly how you guys are doing because I'm here every single show. So
It's not about us. It's about you. You're a very busy man right now.
Hey, okay. Here's how I'm doing.
Oh.
I'm 100% healthy. Unlike our friend that we shared a plate of King's Crown nachos with at Sneaky D's, you were there present, Damien.
Yeah.
Tell the world your health update, because you as well, the three of us, as well as Court Bauer, shared this plate of nachos.
Yep.
Only one of us is still sick right now.
He's still sick?
With the viral. I don't know. What is his health?
Yeah.
I think he's relatively back to 100%. Okay, but this included a hospital visit.
Yeah.
Pneumonia was part of the description.
He had the stomach flu.
I know that he was rolling with a pretty hard drinking crew that was a big fan of the flavored vodka. So maybe it was his weakened immune system brought on by all the excessive flavored vodka drinking.
And the barbecue.
And the delicious barbecue, which I assure you.
Look, there's all this food somehow ties into you.
I know.
These Sneaky D's, which is your suggestion.
Hey, or, I'm not saying I'm a plague
bearer.
Barbecue
place.
All I know is I didn't get sick, and that's all that matters.
When is this Vice story going to run?
My Vice documentary.
The
Vice interview that I did with JR is going to run pretty soon. I think they've got it editing right now. Vice, the thing is, there are so inundated with content. It's just a matter of editing to get it up now, but they're working on the JR thing, and then I'm doing a medical marijuana documentary for Vice too that's coming out pretty soon.
When will that be out?
In July. But the JR, I interviewed JR for Vice, and we ate
for the marijuana documentary.
No. I believe me, if I knew that JR, if he had expressed any interest in marijuana, I would have said, please be in my documentary, but he did not. He did express a love for flavored vodka and barbecue. He loved that barbecue, and that was awesome. I felt so vindicated because he came in to Electric Mud, a great restaurant here in Toronto, and was just not taking it seriously at all. And then they
– Is he a bit of a barbecue snob because of all his background?
I don't expect him to.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Certainly. He had some very strict rules on what did and did not constitute barbecue, and expected
– What were some of those rules?
If it came near a grill, it was not barbecue. And he told me that so emphatically. He's like, how do they cook their food here? And I'm like, I don't know. It's barbecue. Is it on a grill? And I'm like, no, it's not on a grill, JR. I don't know. I promise you it's good. So they bring out the ribs. He liked the ribs a lot. He thought the ribs were very good, but he loved their fried chicken. He said it was the best fried chicken he'd ever had since his grandmother's, and he thought it was incredible. He thought it was good enough to get Jim Cornette to come back to Canada.
Wow.
He's like, the skin alone would get Jim Cornette to cross that border.
Whoa.
So. Man, I can't believe I've never – not only not been to this place, but never heard of it. I think the next time we do a podcast, I think we should go to Electric Mud afterwards.
We should definitely go to Electric Mud afterwards. That would be a fantastic little trip. We could have a fun time there. They have bourbon too. I don't drink, but I imagine an alcoholic like Wei Ting is, and you being a tingling, would be fans of bourbon.
I went out over the weekend, and I've started now to just diversify myself from strictly beer to different mixtures of drinks. And it definitely started from the recommendation of flavored vodka. And it's amazing how many places in Toronto just look at you like you're an idiot when you ask for flavored vodka.
What flavor?
I want grape-flavored vodka. That is my new thing that I want to get.
I think it does exist. I think Absolute a couple years ago made like tons of different varieties.
Okay.
Yeah, great mixed drinks you can make. But in Canada, it's like it's a weird kind of deal. It's almost like in the U.S., when you want to get coffee with milk, it's like, what?
Yeah. Well, because our liquor, especially in Ontario, is so controlled by the LCBO.
You can't have any fun with your liquor.
Nope. They want you utilitarian. You want vodka? You mix it with grape juice like your own damn self. We're not going to mix it with grape flavor.
It feels like such a kindergarten approach to things.
Hey, how do you think I feel, John, when my chosen product is still firmly illegal all the way across the board? They don't even let you have unflavored marijuana. Marijuana, period's banned. There's all these crazy flavors in America.
Yeah, what flavors are there? Can you mix grape?
Strains? Grape? There is a grape. It's got a slight grape scent. Now the problem is people are adding chemicals to try and make these – enhance these scents and stuff. Mm-hmm. But there is a naturally grape smelling. Grape Ape is a great strain. I love those fruit. Oh, this is going to start selling me like the podcast.
Indulge us.
No, I love the fruity smelling sativas, like especially those sort of like land strains, like Congolese smells ridiculous. Seedman's Haze smells incredible too. Really kind of fruity, full bouquets. Like it smells like a flower.
Like cigars, I mean, they customize them to that. I remember my dad always used to have these like grape, like flavored cigars.
Oh, like Backwoods?
Not Backwoods. I'm trying to remember what the exact wording was.
Were they Swisher Sweets?
Yeah. I mean,
if your dad was smoking Swishers, your dad was down with Southern hip hop, right, Way?
Oh.
Rolling up the Swishers. Like
My dad loved
hip hop.
Right.
Yeah, that's why dad had that Cash Money pendant.
Yeah, he's like, crack that Swisher, clear out the tobacco, sprinkle in the weed, lick it, stick it, blaze it.
Yep, that was his mantra.
Here you are. He is the father of a rapper.
That's a thing. You know, it's like baby and Lil Wayne.
Yeah. Like father, like mother.
But a literal dad this case.
Yes.
What's your media tour like right now? You're cutting this show short today.
I know.
You got a big appearance to make.
Fans
somewhere.
Are disappointed.
I know we're on a time limit tonight.
You even hired a driver today. I understand.
I do. I have
Asian chauffeur.
Yeah.
No, I didn't do anything with it. Well, that's the thing. When you're a tingling, that's how far Way's willing to go for you as a fan. He will drive you across the city because he's
anything
like
anything for an Abrahammer.
Everything for an Abrahammer. Well, one Abrahammer helps out a tingling all the time. You know, that's what we roll. Like how we all have nicknames for each other. What could be?
You introduced them all.
Mouthies.
And they were all.
No, you guys introduced teams. I didn't want to pick sides. You guys are forcing the fans now to pick sides.
It was a Jason Agnew creation. We should come up with nicknames. This is so self-indulgent. Way more self-indulgent.
What do you think this podcast is, Way?
That's what people
love. We're literally putting up hours and hours of telling people, hey, our thoughts are worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
Come listen to us.
That is broadcasting. It's
a very self-indulgent industry when you think about it.
But that's why
all the bands out there, Damien Abraham is going to go onto so many outlets this week and say, of all your musical selections, of all the things you can do, this is the album you need to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one. If you're going to legally download something, this is the one you need to listen to because.
Or go to the store and buy it on vinyl or CD.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm not advocating illegal downloading, but unfortunately,
but
I bet you there's people out there that
now there's still streams too, right? So, but I'm sure people are downloading it. It's like fine. And that's like the reality of the business. But that's why I love this podcast is because you guys are personal. Like I feel like I'm being brought into your lives. When I'm in the cold, dead silence of my tour van and I hear the warm, bubbly conversation of friends back and forth.
What, even our impact discussions?
Even the impact discussions. Yeah, as you were like, I remember last week. Like
Suicide Watch?
Knowing that you're going through that, I feel like, you know, someone's suffering watching Impact. And so I get to enjoy that. I love the Impact ones. So if you were going to start reviewing ROH, I wouldn't be opposed either. Because I do think you'd have more fun.
I get more enjoyment out of Way being so uncomfortable talking. It's great.
Yeah, it was just a bad week last week.
For Impact? I would say for Impact.
For Impact. Impact, it feels like, man, it's just like every time it's like you think it's rock bottom for that show, and you're like, well, where could they go now? It's got to start pulling out an upswing type thing. It's nope. We find another way to sink to another deep depth.
That's fine, though.
It's fine. Absolutely.
Keep going this way. Yeah. It's educational.
I think they should blow the show up. They should just have, like, something really crazy happen. Like, I don't know, that alien plan from WCW. They're, like, finally breaking. You ever hear that?
Where Mike Tenay would be discovered to be an alien?
Yeah, Disco Inferno, the Disco alien Inferno, invasion.
We just watched the X-Men movie, and we had suggested some type of time travel thing where they can go back in time, and all of a sudden, no, TNA didn't exist.
Yeah.
Chikara booking. Yeah. Bringing some Chikara, like, time traveling, slow motion type stuff.
So we're essentially saying TNA is sort of the distant, terrible, apocalyptic version of pro wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
If you had to pick a version of that, TNA would probably fit the bill.
Mm. Well, if all these other products are going to launch soon, they're just going to get lost in that shuffle, especially if they lose that TV deal. So it's like, why not be the one that is on the tip of everyone's tongue?
Are you going to be watching the Ring of Honor pay-per-view?
It's next weekend, right?
It's the weekend after Slammiversary.
Yeah, I think.
Back-to-back weekends.
If I'm in England, probably not because we're on tour.
Oh, that's right. You're off
back,
there.
I'm definitely watching it. I'm really excited to watch it. I think I'm going to even have it, like, go to friends and watch it, like, as a group and you know,
do you have,
celebrate,
like, a big wrestling fan community, like a friend community?
Oh, his
friend
band. Community. His band. Yeah. They all love
wrestling. Yeah, everyone in my band is like, hey, Damien, let's go back to the room and watch some old Japanese mid-90s YouTube links.
Come on, Abrahammer.
Come on. No. I have, like, friends that love wrestling, like, yeah. A bunch of people in bands in Toronto.
That are, like, as hardcore of a fan as you, like, into ROH?
Yeah, like, I've got some – I know some people, like, you know, through the marijuana community and stuff that, like, you know, watch wrestling all the time, and some friends from the, you know, music scene that watch wrestling. Mm-hmm. A lot of them watched it a lot more in the past, but are still familiar enough with all, like, you know, ROH, CZW, like, all the indies. Like, we're into it through the rise of the indies,
right,
and stuff like that. It's just it's kind of like watching this show. It's like, oh, that was the peak of the indies. Like, you can't really see the show we're going to be talking about in a minute, I guess, but, like, you can't really see when you're in something when the peak is, and then you, like, look back. Like, I realize the hippest we're ever going to be was kind of, like, just prior to the last record coming out, or maybe just after the last record came out. We were just, like, so hip. And now it's, like, it's still great. Like, I love being in my band, but I know we're, like, not Pitchfork cool like we used to be. And you can't really see that until you're through it. And now I think looking back on this show and, like, you know, and just, I guess, just after Punk left, and it was still, like, Joe in ROH before he left and stuff. It was still, like, that was the peak of the indies, I guess, for that period.
Would you feel comfortable showing some of your band members, Necro Butcher and Samoa Joe?
I have showed this video to more people. Like, there's on YouTube, there was a Nirvana, I Know You're Right song synced up to the highlights of this match. And that was – that was Necro Butcher Superstar, which was a Necro Butcher highlight video that was synced up to Nirvana, I Know You're Right. And then there's this match, which was synced up to the theme of Saw or something.
Sure.
All the highlights from this match. And those are my two go-tos when people are like, oh, yeah, I liked wrestling, but, you know, it's kind of bullshit fake. I'm like, oh, yeah, let me show you something. I just want to show you this video. I'm not disputing your hypothesis with wrestling being fake, but I just want to show you this first. And this is my go-to video.
You didn't show them the Triple H YouTube video?
No, I don't show
them. You didn't show that highlight?
No, I don't show that.
See, if I want to sell wrestling to people, I'd be showing them the headlock match between Castagnoli and Brian Danielson from PWG.
See, I think that stuff, and obviously, if you're a fan at any level, you'll get a kick out of that. But if you're not a fan...
Oh, yeah, you won't get it.
...at any level at all, you won't get it. But if you watch this...
It would be like a concept album.
Yeah.
You know, to show somebody.
And this is like... This is like, you know, one of those videos you would watch in university or high school where your friend would be like, you got to see. This is crazy. Like, banned from television type thing. Like, that's what this wrestling match is. It's just like... Right. An anomaly. It's just like so brutal.
How did you first find this?
I first found it, I guess it was like I was kind of getting into wrestling, like the indie stuff, a little bit on the internet, watching things when this match kind of happened. I remember hearing about it, and I guess someone had a tape of it or DVD of it, and we watched it one time, and I'm just like, that is crazy. And then when it showed up on YouTube, it became my, like, go-to, like, oh, yeah, you seen the movie The Wrestler? And it's like, yeah. I'm like, well, that guy's a real wrestler, in the guy that staples the money to his face, so you got to see this. And just showing him this match, and there's, like, I think I've watched this more than any other wrestling match ever.
Wow.
And just having a bad day, just pop this
I don't even know if it's like my favorite match because there's so much like there's legitimate moments of sadness and like profound, you know, desperation and disturbing thoughts that rattle in your brain forever after you watch it. But it's just there's something about it where, you know, you can show it to someone and they're just like – their reaction is what you watch almost.
You're really fucked up, Damien.
Well, it's just like there's no way to prepare someone for this. It's like you can see – you know, you'll see blood like that JBL John Cena match that you guys referred to the other week a lot.
Yes.
You know, like that's a bloody, bloody match. You know, and I think you even reviewed that show before. Did you guys? No, maybe not. Did
which?
You see JBL? That's what you,
that we just reviewed.
We did JBL John Cena.
2 weeks ago, right? The really bloody last man standing – I quit match.
Yes.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Anyway, that is wrestling – blood, you know, that is like, you know, it's blood, real blood, but it's wrestling blood. It's in the confines of what you have established in the 2000s, what is and isn't wrestling, professional wrestling. This is blood on another level. Like there's moments in this where you're like, how do you take that? Like, how do you take a bump like that? Like just, oh. And then there's two other matches on the card too, which are, you know,
which Way was able to track down.
I know.
Okay. Well, first of all, yes, this is going to be a shorter review.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't find the whole show. This was a IWA Mid-South Something to Wrestle, but we couldn't find the whole show.
I think there's only two other matches before this too. From what I would like,
there was a
because it was a double show. CZW ran after this show. Yes. Thing, but
they had other matches too on the card.
Okay.
But I was only able to track down these three matches that we're about to talk about from this website called Click Wrestle. And I think it's a great idea. It's essentially almost like an iTunes where you pay 99 cents per match. The only peculiar thing about it though, yeah, it's 99 cents for this Necro Butcher Joe match. It's 99 cents for Punk versus Homicide. The women's match between Mischief, Alice in Danger, and who's a
Mickey Knuckles.
Yeah. For whatever reason, $2.49. I thought that was odd. This is not the main event.
Three people were in the match.
Well, okay.
A lot more residuals.
I thought that was strange. You know, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, you figure those two would garner the higher rates. So then I like looked at the rest of the website, and it turns out this is like sort of one of those erotic fetish sites where they air a bunch of like
God you didn't buy the wrong match.
Other women's wrestling matches, like I'm talking like, you know, like
it's like apartment wrestling.
Yeah, something like that. Like, you know, wrestling in bikinis. Like, so they sell a lot of these, and therefore the women's matches, I guess, come at a premium price, more over the Samoa Joe Necro Butcher Classic.
He's like gonna get off by Mickey Knuckles getting a fucking spike jabbed in her forehead. Face.
Yeah.
Oh my God! It was a cool match too. I don't know if it's worth more than the Joe versus Necro Butcher match, but
some people.
I guess whatever gets you off.
That's right.
This was a very when you look back in history at June of 2005, it was very interesting when you look back at all the different stuff that was going on. You mentioned that weekend. That was the weekend that, of course, CZW and IWA Mid-South had their doubleheader at the ECW Arena. That was also the weekend of the ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Mm. And the Hardcore Homecoming show, which was also at the ECW Arena that weekend. And you couple that with just everything that was going on at that time in the industry. That was a very interesting month. And this show, I've really watched very little IWA Mid-South. It's more just read a lot about it, especially during kind of their heyday of like 2002, 2003, where that was the first time I had ever heard of CM Punk, where he was doing these, you know, 93-minute matches with Chris Hero, mm-hmm. or they were doing this stuff that was completely new. Because it hadn't been done in so long. Guys doing 60-minute matches regularly, doing an hour-and-a-half match. And that's kind of IWA. They kind of base themselves on both being like the blood and guts promotion, but also having some great wrestling where you could put two guys out there for 90 minutes and keep a crowd.
Well, they do all the King of the Death matches too, right?
Yeah.
Like that, and that's where
this is Ian Rotten's promotion as well.
And he was just on – Colt had him on last week, I think.
Yes.
Which was a great – interview, I thought too.
Yeah, Ian Rotten is a polarizing figure.
Yeah, like, and I can see why, but like, you know, what he did with this IWA Mid-South, it's going to be something that people look back upon, like they look back upon maybe ECW or Ring of Honor in a smaller way, where like it's like somewhere where these guys, you know, like even watching CM Punk in this show, and especially when he does the audio commentary during the women's match, which leaves a little to be desired, his audio commentary, but his commentary, I should say. But he feels like so at home in this promotion. You can tell this was kind of like his backyard. Like even when he talks to the crowd or people at the ring, at ringside and stuff, it just feels like. You know, he feels a lot more at ease than he appears when you watch him, you know, last
couple of like months. It seemed like he was definitely having fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
It felt like this. He was amongst his friends, and he was just about to, you know, perform amongst his friends.
And it wasn't always a great relationship either. There was a time CM Punk had walked out on Ian Rotten. They had a big falling out and then had come back to work together. And this actually was right at the time when Punk was about to sign or had already signed his developmental deal with the WWE, and the following weekend
was Summer.
Is where he won the ROH title and began that whole Summer of Punk deal, eventually ending with him dropping the title and going to the WWE. But it was pretty much at this point, everyone was assuming this was his wrap-up of shows on the independent circuit before he was going to go to the WWE. So that whole time period, it was very interesting to look at, especially as IWA was doing their first show in Philadelphia. They were mainly based out of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess which match do you want to start with? I've got Punk and Homicide.
That's
here.
What I had first, too.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's.
I think chronologically, that's actually what, because they refer to it in the next match. So.
Yeah, this was like the second match on the show. And pretty much we had Dave Prazak doing play-by-play with a rotating merry-go-round of color commentators.
Seemingly at random.
Beginning with Tracy Smothers, who was my favorite of all of them.
Yeah, he was also late to show up, too.
Smothers asks, his first question is the girls' match up next? And Prazak has to inform him, no, it's CM Punk and Homicide. So then Smothers, doing some last-minute research, then asks on the air, well, who's the baby face and who's the heel? Just getting his bearings straight. And Punk comes out. He's a total baby face here with a ROH students Matt Turner, Davey Andrews, and Shane Hagedorn, because Punk had been running the ROH training facility at this time in Philadelphia, so coming out with his proteges.
Is the guy that looked just like Kevin Steen.
Would have been Shane Hagedorn.
Yeah, because he also is the guy I think CM Punk signs his contract on, the ROH title. He's holding the title, and I'm like, I always thought that was Kevin Steen, and I'm like,
yeah, Hagedorn would later become the manager for Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. Not the greatest manager in the world, but he was kind of just served his role there.
Yeah.
And so Prazak comes out Prazak is describing Punk, and Smothers then asks, what's Punk's finish? And Prazak explains, well, he does the Pepsi plunge, which is kind of like a pedigree off the top rope. And this was about his... The mics could have been off, and this was the conversation they were having. And I think with anyone else, Smothers would have driven me insane. But for whatever reason, I love Tracy Smothers. His just oblivious old veteran deal here was awesome. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Well, I couldn't tell, because at various times, like I couldn't tell if he was playing like ignorant about Punk and Homicide, or if he was actually just like, I don't give a hell. I don't give what's going on.
It's probably a mixture of both.
Of both, yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me that Tracy Smothers would know nothing about these people he shares a locker room with every single weekend.
Exactly. Not really watching from the curtain.
CM Punk applies a hold onto the trapezius muscle of Homicide and then shouts to the crowd, it's a nerve hold! I got great enjoyment out of this.
Also, I think that's that point Smothers talking about how CM Punk has a bright future.
Yes. Well, correct.
Very true.
Correct.
Like, you know, like.
From most. And then, just for no reason, I imagine Tracy Smothers just got bored and left. Because then Steve Mack joined the commentary to replace Smothers. And they note how Punk has recently added muscle and reduced his body fat. Mac then discusses the local independent scene and gives a background bio of himself, formerly being part of the Hit Squad in Ring of Honor. And then, I don't know why I enjoyed this line so much, because it's very apropos to so many independent talents out there. He noted, both men are well-versed in finishers. They know how to hit finishers well. Mac continues just describing both. Punk blocks an O'Connor roll and hits a Shining Wizard for a two count. They went into pin attempts back and forth. Homicide hits an Ace Crusher, which Mac notes, he stole that from Kajama. I think he meant Kojima. And then Punk hits him with a pile driver. Punk ducks a lariat. There's an inside cradle. Homicide reverses it, and Homicide cradles Punk for the win in 13 minutes and 50 seconds, if you, neither of you were timing it. And CM Punk loses here as Ian Rotten then gets into the ring for what would be many, many appearances with Ian Rotten. He was involved in every post-match on this show.
Yeah, he was involved in all over the show.
He was like Triple H.
Yeah, pretty much. I thought the crowd was very attentive here, but, you know, nobody was really going nuts over anything. And maybe they're not supposed to.
This was the second match of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
For many people that were probably sticking around for two shows that day as well. So maybe some points here for pacing.
But I thought it was a well-done, good mid-card match from these two.
See, had you guys seen the Necro Butcher Samoa Joe match before this?
No, I had never seen it.
Okay, see, that was my problem. I had. So I'm watching this match being like... Yeah, okay. Yeah, like,
bring out some nails.
I know, I'm just like I know what happens next. Like, I know where this is going. And it felt like watching a horror movie in reverse where you know how the massacre turns out, but now you're having to watch like the lead up to it. So I'm watching this audience like totally unprepared for what's to come, and it's just I don't know, like it's a great wrestling match. I don't think it shows how great either of these two guys can be.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It was a mid-card match. And I think, you get to see a different style from CM Punk here.
Oh, absolutely.
From how he wrestles even today.
But I think even then when he did that style, he had matches that were – I think he wasn't trying as hard as on this show really. But it's still a great match.
Ian Rotten is in the ring, and he mentions that next week might be his final IWA show. He thanks him. He says, thank you for teaching the young kids not to be assholes. And along with Punk, Colt Cabana, Chris Hero, and Ace Steel, they turned IWA from blood and guts to real wrestling. They shake hands, they hug, and Punk thanks the audience, and the crowd chants, thank you, Punk, as he leaves. But there will be much more CM Punk later on in the show. And that'll take us to our three-way for the women's title with champion Mischief defending against Mickey Knuckles and Allison Danger, that Dave Prazak refers to as the most prestigious women's title in North America. And Allison Danger cuts a promo that was completely inaudible on this. Yeah. I couldn't make out a word she said. And
it just wasn't mic'd, and they didn't really boost the audience.
No.
It was mic'd. It wasn't patched into the recording.
Yeah, they didn't get a board out recording release.
Very tough to hear.
I think it was more or less, though, about how she wasn't booked a lot. Like, I was trying to figure out if it was going to play into the match at all, but I don't know. Maybe it played into an angle.
Perhaps. Dave Prazak is on commentary with a manager from the promotion named Jim Fannin. And Prazak yells, do your talking in the ring, Danger! And Fannin comes back saying, she is in the ring, Dave! It's a good playoff of Prazak here. And, okay, the match begins. Prazak and Fannin begin to have the most confusing discussion about how a three-way elimination match works. And if the first person gets eliminated, does the person who pinned them become the champion momentarily until the finish? I didn't know.
It wasn't.
This is not the hardest match to describe. In the history of professional wrestling, a three-way elimination match is not too tough, but kudos to these two for making it.
Hmm.
CM Punk then kicks Fannin out and takes over color commentary by announcing that he loves three-ways and he loves women. A lot of people find CM Punk to be really witty and funny and inside. I did not enjoy this man on commentary.
This was his, like, I loved his commentary run on WWE. You know, when he had that.
And he'd used a lot of this similar kind of wit that worked in a WWE environment. And I'll even say Tracy Smothers was very similar. And I don't know why. Maybe because Tracy Smothers is this old guy that it kind of just, I enjoyed it. Whereas Punk, I didn't at all. I just thought he detracted from this match. And this would be, if this happened on WWE where it was a JBL or someone like this, people would just completely shit all over this. And Punk gets a lot of leeway from people, but not me in this match.
If JBL started making implied rape jokes, which is what CM Punk kind of does at one point.
Probably couldn't go that far on
USA like he would get in huge trouble, censured in some sort of capacity.
He's also dealing with a much smaller audience here. Yeah. Like I said, you know, it felt like he had it felt like he was just having fun amongst a small group of friends. And who knows, maybe.
And for the most part, I'm sure, Punk and his crew, I mean, they were notorious for being Like, they would watch everything they did. They would watch back. I'm sure a lot of it was just to pop his friends when they would go back and watch these tapes. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, making rap videos with their friends. It's, you don't assume anybody
fuck,
would.
He just won't let that die, will you?
I'm just using that.
This guy who won't put out anything of his own from his 15-year-old impressionable phase.
Dude, I'm just using that
as does he like to kick me in the nuts whenever possible.
I'm just using that as an example here. You know, you probably tend to say things that you don't expect people to even pay attention to 10 years down the road.
And also, aren't you glad, John, when the worst that you have is this rap video where CM Punk has this commentary track, which, believe me.
Maybe he's proud of this. Maybe.
Maybe, if he is, hope.
He was also a much younger
guy.
Yeah, he was a much younger guy. And also, like, you know, the last thing he probably thought was that this was going to be seen.
Yes.
You know, just at the time, 10 years later, and
I bet you this guy doesn't give two fucks if this were to go on YouTube tomorrow and have 500 million views.
It is actually on YouTube.
I think he would about that because he's got a lot of friends that would probably be like, "Yo, that wasn't cool." But who knows?
What was the exact? Because I miss.
It was when
a
they're carrying out Alice in Danger, and he's like, "Boy, when she's passed out, when they get her to the back."
Oh,
are they
that's
gonna...
right. I do recall. Well, let's get to the match here. After they argue over the rules, and Punk has interjected himself, Danger goes to the floor. So Knuckles and Mischief wrestle in the ring. I thought that some very weak offense from Mischief, like her punches, her forearms, it was like. I don't know. Worked very light.
It was a little sloppy. I mean, I felt from almost like all three of them, unfortunately.
But her bridges were great. I mean, very flexible.
She had a couple really cool like Hurricane Ranas through the under and
yeah.
And
now the Mischief is Miss Elgin.
Oh really? Elgin's wife. Oh yeah. And she still wrestles in ROH from time to time too, right?
Occasionally.
What happened to Mickey Knuckles? Yeah,
She still works in the odd independent. She like got her big break in like 2008, where after she had done all these like death matches and working with guys, and she got hired by or at least given a tryout by TNA, and she got onto TV. And then before she signed her contract, she worked an indie show, shattering her leg. And TNA had told her, "We'll still give you a contract when you're ready." Unfortunately, when she either had a setback or. I can't remember what happened. Anyway, ended up not getting the TNA deal.
Oh.
And later got pregnant. Now she's back to doing indie wrestling and unfortunately just never got that TNA contract. But she did appear on TV in 2008, giving her the most offensive name you can come up with a woman, Moose Knuckle. Just fucking disgusting shit that they would come up with for women.
Oh.
For those of you that think that they didn't have some deep resentment of the female... gender. Anyway, that's the background on Mickey Knuckles.
Wow, but she's really good in this match. Like, I thought she was awesome.
Well, she was a real standout in IWA. I mean, a woman doing these death matches was novel to this audience, and she was kind of the poster woman for these kinds of matches.
But I even thought her selling, like, even in the wrestling stuff, like, in this match, like, I thought she gets...
Well, I think at the end, I don't think there was any selling.
No, the end, I think
it's
real.
That was just fucking gruesome.
Yeah.
Punk is talking about Daisy Hayes, who was a former champion that had nothing to do with this match, but just went on and on about
it. He said he liked Daisy Hayes on top.
Yeah, Daisy likes it on top. They explain she's in Mexico. Punk then senses his comedy is falling flat, so if nothing else, the guy's perceptive. And sounded as well like he was eating as he was doing his commentary. And as Way knows, there is nothing I hate more than like... eating or just stuff with your mouth on the air is my fucking pet peeve.
I was going to try and bring some fries in here, and I'm so glad
no,
I didn't now.
No,
oh my
absolutely
God.
Not.
John, what a
coffee is okay.
That's a liquid that is not – I can't tell.
Would you be pissed, though, if someone went right into the mic?
Have some courtesy and just go to the side, 3 o'clock then come back to midnight. They start talking about the renovations inside the building because it was apparently ungodly hot in this ECW arena. No AC. There's a suicide dive by Knuckles to both as she lands on the floor. Mischief comes off the top of the crossbody to the floor, to which Punk asks what they are wearing underneath their wrestling gear. I was done with Punk at this point. There's a running dropkick by Knuckles to Danger against the guardrail, and then Danger comes back with an STO to Mischief. Punk worked in an ovaries metaphor.
The STO, space takedown ovaries, wow. As you call it.
Very clever. Mischief then hits the red mist to Allison Danger, and this takes her out of the match. She is eliminated, but the ring announcer cannot be heard on the viewing portion, so Dave Prezak instructs us what the ring announcer has clarified to the live audience, that Allison Danger has been eliminated. Then Mischief hits the green mist to Knuckles, who ducks, and this takes out referee CJ Otis. And then Mischief continues with double stomps to Knuckles. Then Mischief takes her vest, which features spikes coming out of it, places it onto the face of Knuckles, who is draped down in the corner, and proceeds to hit two running knees to the vest on top of her face. I didn't know what was going to happen here, but as they took the vest off of Knuckles, she had like this circular dent in her like temple that was leaking blood. If this was a blade job, it was the greatest blade job in history, because it looked like this spike fucking pierced her skull.
Well, that, I was wondering, the only place I thought she might do it is, you know, she pulls up the vest at one point to adjust it so it's back over her face. I'm like, there, but otherwise I'm like, that looks like it's hard way.
This looked gruesome. Oh, that's all I can say. And it led to Bryce Remsburg running in, and Knuckles kicks out here. She's gushing blood. Mischief misses a Kibrata. Knuckles hits a Shining Wizard and pins her to become the champion at 1542. And then later, there would be a big disagreement over the NWA Midwest and the IWA Mid-South claiming ownership of this title and whether this was a sanctioned women's title match. And it led to the splintering of the women's title, with the IWA Mid-South women's title being awarded to Knuckles.
Oh, my.
This
wow.
was a big controversial
match. How many IWAs
match.
Were there?
Oh, they had many affiliates. They mentioned them on this. I don't know how many off the top of my head.
And then she's like the whole time in the post-match, looks like she's going to die.
She looked like she was going to pass out here from blood loss as Ian Rotten, Chris Hero, and others came in to check on her. And Punk remains on commentary as Prezak goes into the ring. Rotten gets on the mic, calls her the baddest bitch on the planet, and Rotten just continues on, I think addressing critics, and it ends with Punk telling him, relax, which was his... Was funny as Rotten's cutting this angry promo.
Well, he was playing Punk was playing a heel, was he not?
No, he was like the babyface in his match, getting the big send off.
I don't know
what he was playing. He was playing CM Punk here.
Yeah,
I think it was all gray area. Was anyone a babyface or a heel in this, in any of these matches?
I don't know. When it's promoted by Ian Rotten, I guess that's par for the course.
Yeah, the guy.
Different interpretations of the man.
I met a dude the other week, and he's like, "Guys, I remember seeing this match one time." And these it was these two guys, the two wrestling tag team, they're splintering, and I'm like, from ECW, the Rottens, and I'm like, oh yeah, and he's like, and they put glass on their hands, and they're punching each other in the face with the glass. I'm like, I've seen that the Taipei Death Match, I've seen that match, and he's like, yeah, I was there live. And I'm like, what was that like live? He's like, it was a weird vibe, weird environment to see a live
glass punching death match.
Well, that's the thing, Ian Rotten, he makes people do it, but he also can take it.
They're, like, in the end of the show here, for some, like, he wasn't involved in anything, it looked like, but all of a sudden he shows up talking and he's got blood on his forehead.
Covered in blood.
Well, we didn't see all the show, right? I'm sure he was involved many a time in many a post match as well. So, you know, you don't get a forehead like that by just being a promoter.
No.
So you become a rock star.
Watch some of Axl Rotten Wars.
That's the thing.
Lead singer.
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
The roadmap.
Yeah,
I thought it was a good women's match. I thought it was kind of a little sloppy at times, but there were some cool moves thrown in.
And got a lot of time, too.
Yeah, and they
this was the largest video file you sent us. This is 25 minutes.
It was the most expensive one, too.
The most expensive
one. Yeah, well.
Twice the price.
$299. Were your expectations, or at least your critical analysis, heightened because of the cost here?
No.
Cost-benefit analysis of a three-way
really.
Women's match.
I mean, I'm used to pay-per-views costing like $35 and not being very good.
Would you pay $2.99 for Slammiversary?
$2.99?
Yes.
No.
Oh.
It's not even the price. It's the investment of time.
Oh.
Yeah. I think that would be it. Like, it would be free, but there's just at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't watch it if it was free.
How exciting. It sucks, too, because there's so many great guys, like workers, wrestlers in that promotion. I did air quotes there. No one could hear that on the podcast.
We got it.
You got it. You guys knew what I was saying. But, like, there's so many great wrestlers there, and it's just like, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm just not invested in it. Maybe it's just the lack of enthusiasm, though, that you guys are conveying. Maybe if you guys did better reviews, more of us would be buying Slammiversary. So it's your faults.
You know what'll be the funniest is that if TNA goes out of business, there will be wrestlers that will actually come out and say, the internet killed TNA. Their negativity ruined TNA. There will be people that will actually try and make that argument, and I cannot wait for it.
The dirty sheets and the internets.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I love that. All these people that read the internet. Can you imagine another industry where it's like, oh, all these people out there who like read the newspaper and keep up with news. Oh, these fucking people. Like, get a life, man.
Well, the NFL.
Like, wrestling is the only industry where it's like, how dare you cover this seriously? Mm-hmm. How dare you? How dare you follow this with any degree of seriousness attached to it? This is a joke.
It's one of the only industries where the number one company runs away from what the audience wants. You know, I can't think of any other industry that's almost set up with reverse, customer service satisfaction. You know, like, oh, this is what you guys are hoping happens? Guess what? Not going to happen. Oh, you like this guy? Guess what? We're going to ruin him now for you.
This is just off topic. What is the weirdest concept album that someone's put out that you can recall? Is there any, some guy who just saw, maybe I'll put a silent track on.
Oh, there's tons of those.
Oh, are there?
There's the silent record. There's also, Philip Glass did that silent symphony?
I don't know.
Or Cage. I mean, it's one of the big modern composers did a silent symphony. But Body Works, which is Roger Waters from Pink Floyd's concept album about the body made with sounds from the human body.
Wow.
Oh, pretty boy,
pretty out there. There's like a bunch
what
of...
What about that Metal Machine music from...
Metal Machine music? Reed. Yeah, definitely a record based entirely on alienating your audience and fan base is up there. There's definitely tons because there's like... You know, every concept record is bizarre and self-indulgent. Like Tommy, if you ever sit down and try and figure out the plot to Tommy, you know, it's like, okay, this kid lost his hearing and sight because he saw his mom's boyfriend kill his dad, and then there's like a holiday camp.
It's like Abyss.
He's a priest. Yeah, exactly. Then he's like a messiah to people. Then everything falls apart, and then he gets his sight and hearing back. And he's playing pinball. Anyway. They're all weird.
That sounds awesome.
I'll tell you which one is the best, though. David Comes to Life. Boom. I said it.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. It's not. The best one of all time, Season of the Size of Days by Integrity. It's my favorite concept record of all time.
All right.
Okay.
Are you guys ready now for Samoa Joe Necro Butcher?
Oh, my gosh. Am I ever ready?
A match that really did catapult Necro Butcher's career. I mean, his notoriety, his bookings. I mean, everything went through the roof for this guy after this match. This became a cult hit online for this guy of this incredibly fast-paced, violent, violent massacre that I think is the loosest definition of professional wrestling. I mean, this is closer to like some underground King of the Cage event than it is a professional wrestling match, I feel.
Well, it's weird because there's like moments where you're almost like stopping and waiting for someone to pull a move, and it's like, but you're just going to smash the dude as hard as you can in the face. Like, why are you just like even doing it? But it's still like, yeah, it's not a real fight. Like, they're still obviously wrestling because it's not, you know, we all know what real fights look like now. But it's still, like, way more brutal than anything I've ever seen.
But what is professional wrestling? What is the concept of professional wrestling? It's two men engaging in staged physical combat. That's what this is.
But it's also, like, you know...
Would you consider this, like, staged? Like, to me, pro wrestling, the art of pro wrestling is simulated violence that is... inherently simulated. There's nothing simulated here. This was a man cracking his head over and over. Real violence, real pain attached to this.
But
this was two guys fighting, essentially, a planned outcome.
It's not fighting because they're not opposing each other. They're letting each other willingly hit each other over the head with certain things. And what about the blade job? That's pretty violent.
I don't think there was any blade job in this.
Is in a standard match with a blade job, I mean, that's causing physical harm to your body, but you're willingly doing it.
But having done several blade jobs, believe me, the ramifications of a blade job versus a hard way, because I used to bust myself open hard way too, that sucked. It really hurt. You have a big bump, be all bruised and tender around there because I'd hit myself with a microphone or a bottle or can.
Embedded glass.
Yeah, embedded glass stuck in my head. But if you take a razor blade and just cut, it's like a little tiny cut and it just bleeds a lot. But then it heals as long as you don't you know, keep twisting it open, which I imagine some people do. But yeah, Blade Job, I think, is a little less violent. I'm kind of in the middle of both of you. I think it is a wrestling match, definitely. But it's just like there are moments in this where you're like, that's real. Like there's no way to take that. You are landing with your forehead on the ground and it is squirting blood out.
This, outside of Joe and Butcher, maybe my favorite part of this match was Eddie Kingston on commentary.
I also thought Punk, you know, for all the shit we talked about,
way better.
Amazing.
Here.
Like, really, especially in the beginning, like, I'm like, he's putting this over. Like, I feel this is such a huge match now.
This felt like two guys at home who. This felt like if Damian Abraham was watching this at home for the first time, exactly what Eddie Kingston was saying.
Oh, just like, oh my God.
Holy fuck. Oh, and it added to it, I thought.
Oh,
they,
absolutely.
They enhanced this match. And as well, Dave Prezak, I want to say, I quite enjoyed him doing play-by-play. I mean, there's really something to the guy that is – I mean, this guy was just a knew his wrestling holds,
yeah.
Knew all the storylines, knew all the guys, and quite honestly had to be throwing a lot of curveballs with the guys he was paired with. And the fact that you had to go through all these different color commentators. I mean, on the Smark Mark video site, where you can buy this whole event if you choose to, it lists all the different color commentators this guy has to work with on this show, and to be adapting to that degree. I quite enjoyed Dave Prezak. When he was in Ring of Honor and he was with what was the guy's name, the Hog, that play-by-play guy on HDNet, he was atrocious. And Prezak was there as his color guy.
The Hog?
Was his name.
Radio guy?
I can't remember his name. Hogland?
Yeah, I know.
You know who I'm talking about. The old guy.
The guy who knew nothing about
it. And HDNet installed him to be the play-by-play guy. It's like Prezak was put into color to pretty much keep this thing going and explain what was happening to the Hog, who did not know what was happening. But nonetheless, Dave Prezak here calling the action.
And also for indie wrestling, I find commentary a lot of time can really be a hindrance. Like that when we were watching the XPW show, and that commentary drove me nuts and stuff. Whereas
it's not an easy gig,
yeah,
in pro wrestling.
I thought this three-man booth really enhanced this match. Like you said, like it felt like they brought you into it. Like
you're they built up just the entrances where you could tell this crowd was so excited for this match and what was going to happen. And I think that is when you can create that kind of a feel for a match. It's what they created in TNA with Joe and Angle, where part of it, and that's what, when wrestling can really succeed, is that you have these contrasting styles. It's like, what will a match with Samoa Joe and Necro Butcher look like? Mm-hmm. And Prezak outlined this, and this crowd responded to this after they had watched a whole card where there was probably tons of hardcore shit already, and they kept this crowd. They were so excited. They get right into each other's face, toss the referee away, and just start attacking each other with forearms. Prezak is channeling his inner Joey Styles as Joe hits Butcher with an enziguri and then a tope suicida to the floor. They're fighting in the crowd, headbutts back and forth. Butcher's already busted open like a minute into this thing.
I think it was the headbutts. I think Joe hitting him with the headbutts.
I think he just
busted
him open here with like scar tissue exploding.
Yeah.
Butcher starts throwing chairs at Joe just over and over. Everyone is standing, just all these abandoned chairs on the floor. And then Joe attempts a power slam on the cement, and Butcher lands forehead first, just cracks it. And Kingston then responds, he kicked him right in the fucking mouth. And Butcher is just busted open here after his head bounces off the cement.
This is the moment when the first time I saw this, I was like, what is this?
It's a cringe moment. Cringeworthy.
Also, like at this point too, Samoa Joe and Necro Butcher going into this are like, I wouldn't say protected because they're doing their own protecting, I guess, in their booking as indie guys, but like two legit, like as legitimately viewed people as there could be in professional wrestling. Like Samoa Joe was someone like
that. Joe was a super hot.
People would be like, oh, he could jump over to MMA and win an MMA. Like I remember people having that conversation at that time. And like Necro Butcher, it's funny now, like Necro Butcher's had some legal issues, and Joe, of course, has had this TNA kind of career thing that's you know, changed him.
His
stuff.
TNA career.
But
thing.
It's hard. Like, it's like, weird, yeah, I don't know what else to describe it as. But it's like weird looking back on this period and you're like, wow, these guys were so hot. Mm-hmm. Like, just so, like.
Joe in particular, because, I mean, you look at this and there's just, you could tell the audience had so much anticipation to see Joe, who is really the best representative of that style, that mm-hmm. strong style in the indie organizations. And you have Necro Butcher, who is arguably the best representation of a hardcore style. And you're essentially seeing a collision of those two. But Joe was somebody that was so strong at the time, you could have done a number of dream matches with him.
Yeah.
And you did, you know, Joe versus Kobashi, even Joe versus Angle, you know, and this example too. He was just somebody that I think everybody wanted to see compete against the best in other places.
Mm-hmm. Punk notes how promoter Ian Rotten put this match together while he was high as a kite, calling it 420 booking. Butcher then brings a guardrail into the ring to attack Joe with it, hits a senton on top of it. Then they fight on the outside of the apron, and Joe goes for an exploder suplex. There's no mats on the floor, and Butcher cracks his head on the cement from this suplex. He is just leaking blood here. Kingston thought this was fucking awesome.
Nowinski screamed somewhere at this moment.
Oh, this is not a match for the weak at heart with any hopes of a Necro Butcher. I mean, being able to spell the alphabet one day. There is a powerbomb to Butcher onto the barricade. He's draped in the corner. And then back into the ring. They continue fighting. Punk notes how he would rather sign a WWE deal and run far away than participate in a match like this. There are palm and knee strikes from Joe. Butcher is barely able to stand. He's dropping blood at an alarming rate. The crowd is chanting for both as Butcher is staggering. He falls down, and the referee counts him out at the count of 10 for a win by knockout for Samoa Joe in just under 10 minutes. I really enjoyed the finish, and the crowd totally accepted a knockout yeah. finish. They didn't feel they were cheap. It was cheapened by the fact we didn't get a free or a pinfall to end it or a submission. I thought if this was the match you wanted and you enjoy this kind of a style, there's no way you can argue. This crowd loved this match.
And, like, I don't even know if I enjoy this match or the style. Like, because there's moments where you're looking at Necro Butcher and you're just like, you can't help but feel sorry for this guy. Like, when he gets up, it's at 7:34 when he takes that, when they go off the apron and he lands on his forehead and the blood's squirting out. And you can kind of see the whites of his eyes through this crimson mask, like a legit crimson mask. And it's just like, how can you not feel bad for this guy? Like, there's like a real tragedy, and this is like car wreck viewing if there ever was one.
It's a good description of it.
You know, like, you just can't help but like see yeah. it.
I went in like to this match with pretty high expectations. I mean, just from hearing everybody talk about it, and it certainly lived up to it. I thought it was actually going to be a lot longer than it was.
Yeah, so did I.
I thought it was the perfect length, to be honest.
Yeah, but it was only a 10-minute match, but it was a very packed 10-minute match. Yeah. And I think if they had gone at this pace any longer, I think it might have been a little too much.
Yeah, they just went at one speed for 10 minutes essentially, and. Yeah, I think this is exactly what this crowd wanted, and they responded in kind, and this was a match that really upped the profile of Necro Butcher on the independent circuit, and this took place on a Saturday. 8 days later, Joe would make his TNA debut.
Wow. Really? So, well, it's funny because this starts with a stare down, too. You know, Necro Butcher staring and Kurt Angle staring each other right in the face, yelling right. at each other, and it's almost like Kurt Angle versus Joe a few weeks later, I guess, or months later. Years yeah. later? Year later?
No, weeks. Yeah.
Well, Joe versus Angle? Is that
Angle didn't come until
late 2006.
Yeah, a few years later.
So Butcher gets back up, and he tries to go after Joe as guys have to hold him back. Joe just leaves. Crowd is chanting Necro, and I liked how they put the big focus on Necro,
yeah.
who was your guy that you really got as much from losing as winning in this match, which is the most you can hope for when you do this kind of a violent match. Hopefully a guy at least gets something out of it. They're chanting match of the year. Ian Rotten gets on the mic calling Necro a crazy motherfucker, promises a rematch, and he will make it falls count anywhere. And he thanks fans for the support, plugs the CZW show that's coming up later, and then the last 10 minutes of this video were just highlights of the match.
Yeah, no.
The highlights were longer than the match.
Did he ever do the rematch?
There is Joe versus Necro 2.
Okay.
And it used to be on YouTube. Nowhere near as good. You know, because they're all like, Do it here. The crowd starts chanting when Rotten starts talking about how there's going to be a rematch, and they don't do it there. They do it in a gymnasium.
Oh.
Not really the big match feel of the first one, mm-hmm. and it's violent. It's definitely crazy violent, but nowhere near this.
So I guess we're kind of judging this not really as a show because we only watched three of the matches, but of what you watched, I mean, what was your takeaway, Damian?
It's kind of hard to say because it's like I wouldn't like – Yeah, like is it you know, Savage Steamboat? Definitely not. Is it
meant to be?
No, but it's not meant to be. And I think like for what this is the best example of this style of wrestling coming together, like a deathmatch style with like a hard hitting, I guess Japanese style, strong style. So I would say like I feel gonna be so bummed when I say this, but I say for what this is, I'm gonna say it's a 9 out of 10. For what this is.
Wow.
As this type of wrestling show. An indie show.
Well, from what you're telling me about how you always refer to this match to your friends, you know, as an example of what pro wrestling can be.
Not as in like an elevation of the art form in any sorts of way, but more that like, oh, you think you know wrestling? You think you know everything about wrestling? Well,
yeah.
Here's this.
That said as well, I can't tell you how many like horrible, horrible hardcore like death matches I've seen that are just guys that it's merely a shortcut to try and get some kind of reaction, and then when it falls flat, there's nothing more depressing. These two, I mean, it sounds weird, but there is certainly an art to this, and there is certainly a reason people were so stoked for this match with these two, and they worked it at this level that I don't want to just dismiss it as two guys that are just killing each other to mm-hmm. get over. I mean, there are people that are talented at these kind of matches, and there are people that are not.
Well, I feel like you have expectations for certain characters, and this is what the crowd wanted. I mean, you know, like you have like maybe not Abdullah the Butcher now, but who's somebody that bleeds a lot? Whatever. Like
Abdullah shouldn't be bleeding at all.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, okay, well, for instance, like a Terry Funk match. Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily want Terry Funk to wrestle, you know, just a chain wrestling hold for hold type of match. You want to see a Terry Funk crazy match. Same with like Mick Foley. So I think it's cool. Like, you know, especially this is what the crowd wanted and this is what they got. So.
All right, we're going to head over to the message board.
Wait, you guys all chickened out on your numbers. I'm the only one that went on the line-ins at 9 out of 10.
I like the match. I'll give it maybe like a 7.5 out of 10.
I'm about the same.
Yeah. It's a one match show, though, eh?
Yeah,
really a one match show.
Yeah, that's why we really chose it.
No, and thank you guys for humoring me with this one too, because I think this is such a crazy moment.
It was easier week for us.
We'll start off with Christian Smart. Well, way after Impact, he needed an easy one this week. There was no way he was going to sit through. A network show, for instance. Have you seen any of the network? Have you?
I haven't gotten. I'm going to wait till it comes here legit because I don't have the time to set up my IP blocker and kind of, you know, my computer, my TV. I'm going to wait till I can download the app onto my PlayStation 3 and click on it.
Do you know how to download the app? I have a video if you need to.
I've been luckily the show has walked me through it too a little bit, so I'm pretty good now with that. But no, I'm really excited. Like obviously the world class stuff you guys talking about last
week.
I want to see that. That's what I want the network for. You know, like like everyone else does. You know, so you can kind of put on just like an old TV episode and let it play through like you're watching classic wrestling TV.
Let's go into some feedback here because there are some questions for Damian as well in here. Christian writes, I have the Something to Prove DVD. It's a great show overall. IWA Mid-South's debut in the ECW arena delivered, in my view. What I find amazing is how hard Necro worked that night. IWA ran a show in the afternoon, and CZW would do Violent by Design at night. Necro got killed by Joe in that match, which is a personal favorite of mine, and then he would team with Toby Klein to face Nick Gage and Justice Payne in a fantastic wild brawl.
Wow.
Necro worked his ass off in both matches, as did Toby, who bled buckets. It was like Necro wanted to outdo himself, and he almost succeeded. With regards to IWA Mid-South, the company was great between 2004-2008, and in my book, you guys should check out a Ted Petty Invitational at some point. 2004 is seen as the best they ever did. Sadly, now it's seen as a shell of its former self because of Ian Rotten's reputation over the years. I actually have one of the Ted Petty Invitationals on VHS that I've actually never seen, but our man W.H. Park hooked me up with that a few years ago.
It's amazing he worked both two matches that night.
That's insane.
That's the indie schedule, man.
Do you think they had to give him a blood transfusion backstage? Like, what? Here, eat this. Your iron level needs to be brought up to a
non- I'm sure they all had health insurance.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yep.
Aron from Denmark. Wow, only saw the Joe Butcher match. I hope this match made Necro Butcher rich. Somewhere even beat up journeymans of the MMA world would laugh at the punishment Butcher is taking. I seriously feel sorry for this his family. Since I'm part Middle Eastern and I love when WWE offends any kind, can you please offend my kind? Can you please review the SmackDown taping around 9 years ago involving The Undertaker and Muhammad Hassan?
Oh, there's a thread for requests.
Yeah,
that we do consult. Do you have a question?
That was a harsh put down of that.
Well,
feedback.
Come on.
I know what it's like. I listen. I'm ready to get gomped.
How much do you think he would have made for that match, Necro Butcher?
I have no idea.
I'm sure he does.
$1,000?
Remember, this was 2005, though. It was a good time for the independent scene. Jordan from Vancouver, in the past year or so, I developed a weird fascination with death matches, and as a result, saw a lot of CZW and IWA shows. I'm not sure why exactly, as I really do think it's pretty stupid, and the headshots especially make me sick sometimes. It's almost like I give it a pass due to the absurdness and over-the-top factor in the matches. I do think Necro Butcher is a talented guy, though, and Samoa Joe, in his prime, is one of my all-time favorites. The match they had was fucking ridiculous and insanely dangerous. That being said, it's tough to argue that it was exactly what that crowd wanted to see that night. My question, or I guess point of discussion for the show, would be asking you guys what you think about death matches in general and the style of wrestling. I feel like Damian might have some weird interest, as his last chosen show was XPW, and now IWA is on the docket. Thanks for the show, and thanks for the book Savage. It came in the mail the other day. Oh, that was from our contest a few weeks ago. I guess we've kind of outlined it, our thoughts on death matches.
Yeah,
I actually
like death matches, okay? Like, but when they're portrayed with that expectations, like some of the King of the Death Match stuff from Japan, I still watch, and yeah, it's cringeworthy. Yes, it lacks the finesse of, you know, good professional wrestling, but I still think, you know, if that's what a paying audience wants, that's what you should give them.
I think it holds like a place the same way that everything can have a place. I would be very mortified if my son started doing it, so I should definitely preface this by saying that. But I think,
did you not watch this with the family?
No. Holden, I'm waiting to give him wrestling until he's a little bit older, because I think given the limited exposure he's already had, just seeing a Lucha Libre match on the street one day at a street festival, he is really using all those moves to their full advantage. Wow. So I don't want him to learn anything that he can use against me or his little brother.
The young Abrahammer.
Yeah, young Abrahammer. So I'm waiting until he's a little bit older before he gets brought into the world of wrestling. And then I think I'm going to bring him in, you know, King of Deathmatch 4 as the first one. Like,
yeah, wean him in.
That's your first show, right? Like, 4 is where they
work
really
up to the explosives.
Wait, you're going to start off with the death matches and not, you know, like WWE, for instance?
You know, I don't want my son to be weak or soft, you know?
How about these Tony Gurria rest holds?
I'm going to find out from Braden Harrington's mom what she showed him for his first wrestling and do the opposite.
I'm
slaying down the SmackDown. Wow. Yo, what's next this week?
It's up.
Is it up
a day late? It's up Sunday, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
they recorded it after we came back from the Niagara Falls convention, and you get the behind the scenes of the Barbie Blank interview and the Ric Flair scenario too.
Okay.
With mouth.
Okay, I'm gonna download that.
Shane from Birmingham, England says the Necro versus Joe match is worshipped on indie wrestling forums. This is mainly due to the big fight feel and how it differed so much from everything else out there. No convoluted spots, no flippy handspring McFuck twists, and no skinny white dudes wearing pleather. No, this was a fight, and it felt like one. Unfortunately, I can't enjoy this match. I've tried countless times, and I appreciate the effort that the guys put into this. However, something feels off. I don't know whether it's the botched moves or that it plays out like an extended Samoa Joe squash, but I've never quite got the hype surrounding it. There was a big fight feel and the crowd was great, but it didn't click with me. I much prefer Necro's matches with Super Dragon and Low-Ki, which in my opinion are better examples of the Necro versus Indie Monster match. Also, this was actually an afternoon show that preceded a CZW show. Despite the beating that Necro took in this match with Joe, he still wrestled in a brutal wild brawl later on in the evening that actually earned several Match of the Year nominations. And to end it off...
There are too many money matches.
And to end it off, here's an off-topic question for Damien. What with last month's terrific news that Emo Pioneers Mineral are getting back together after 20 years, could a Jawbreaker reunion be not too far away now?
Oh, I hope so.
You like Jawbreaker? You don't know Jawbreaker?
I've never heard of Jawbreaker.
Oh, Jawbreaker had a song on the Angus soundtrack. Do you remember Angus, that movie that Green Day had a hit song on the soundtrack? Mm-hmm. Jawbreaker was kind of... they were a band that influenced tons of bands, like hyper smart pop punk. The lead singer, Blake, I think has a degree from Harvard or something crazy in English literature. Really smart guy. I don't think Jawbreaker is going to get back together. I think Blake is just one of those people that just is not interested in doing it. They could, but I don't know. We played a show a couple years ago with the Forgetters, which is his new band. I think this heart's in that. I feel like I'm having a conversation with the computer, and you guys are just staring blankly.
Okay, next, I'm taking
all this in.
Yeah, yeah. But I like Jawbreaker way more than Mineral, though I do think Mineral's song ND is killer. That's a B-side on one of their 7-inches. Mineral is like the wimpiest of wimpy indie rock.
Man, it's the Braden Harrington.
It's the Braden.
Rock.
I'm not saying Braden's wimpy.
You clearly
No. My implication was I want... I just don't want to
he's
be
lit. Crying right now.
I met him in person. We're friends IRL now. I met him one time and then that's...
He hated you. No, I'm kidding.
John, what did he say? What did he say? What did
he didn't say anything.
What did that shit say?
Braden doesn't hate anything.
No, I'm just kidding. I got nothing for love from him. Yeah, he's just the nicest guy. I just was like, no, I just meant because I don't want to show him whatever keeps him living in my house past the age of 18. I want to show him whatever wrestling.
No, nothing wrong with that.
You get him out of the house?
Nothing. No, no, sorry.
Oh, boy. Oh, look, shit. Just making enemies.
I'm just going to call my new friends Conan and Court Bauer.
No longer a
you can take a tag. Damn it. Maybe you can take a tag. Taxi to that interview.
Whoa.
Damn it.
Martin from London. The women's match on this show made me think of something interesting you guys could debate. This show took place more or less a year after IWA Mid-South's Volcano Girl show, which was an attempt to see if a women's wrestling show in the U.S. was viable. Shortly after the show took place, however, IWA Mid-South and Dave Prazak went their separate ways, and along with Allison Danger, Prazak made an agreement with ROH to produce some women's wrestling DVDs that they could sell. That ended up being Shimmer. 9 years later, which would become a promotion 9 years later, albeit now independent from ROH, has evolved into the premier forum for women's wrestling in the U.S. with a major international presence and devoted fan base. My question here, if IWA Mid-South and Prazak didn't have their issues and Volcano Girls had continued to be a popular attraction for the promotion, how would you guys see women's independent wrestling today if things had gone that way and Shimmer would have never existed? If they were able to do a startup women's promotion, I think the proof's in the pudding with Shimmer. I think there's an audience for it, but not a gigantic one. That's could a national wrestling promotion based around women sustain? Not in this day and age, in my opinion. As fun as Glow was, I don't think that would work today.
Yeah, but that was just done so tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
you know?
A serious women's promotion. I just.
But you're right. Yeah, I mean, you see it even in MMA. You know, in Invicta, I think it's quite popular. But will it ever be as popular as the UFC? Probably not.
It's definitely not.
It's also because there's like, women's wrestling is a legitimate sport. I'm not downplaying that at all, and I love women's wrestling. But there's also so many creepy people that like women's wrestling. Like, you're clicking on this site.
Click Wrestle.
And there's all that fetish stuff, too.
I know it's very different.
John, you cannot tell me that there was there a guy that used to call into the law all the time just to talk about women's wrestling, and you can't say it wasn't creepy when you the way he would talk about
I know who you're talking about. I mean, it's not like he called in with like sexual fantasies. I mean, he was just curious about like the Sarah Del Reyes of the world and enjoyed
I know, but it was
wrestling.
Like, it was a different okay. Maybe I'm just
go ahead, make another enemy. He's listening right now.
Bring it on, Law. I'll take on all the Tingers and all the alcoholics.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the problem is like looking at the big two, I just don't think there's enough quality, or at least they don't
take it seriously.
Yeah, they don't promote actual good women's wrestling. I hate to bring up MMA. You look at the success of Ronda Rousey, who's arguably the biggest star in the UFC right now, and I think people do care.
Or you look at Japan in the 90s and some of those, like, once again, to bring it back to my favorite Fed, FMW, some of those all-women shows are crazy and awesome, and the crowd's just so wrapped up in it.
Or even TNA and Gail Kim, versus Awesome Kong.
Awesome Kong.
That feud was very successful for them.
And the first Beautiful People run was really good, too. Not great wrestling, but a good run.
We should do a Shimmer show at one point.
Sure. I'd love to do a Shimmer show.
We go to Dave in Australia, who says, "Hi, John and Way. Of course, Damien. And of course, Damien. Congratulations on the new album. First, my broad generalization on IWA.
Talking about your rap record, John.
Oh, of course.
Wrestling with light tubes, barbed wire tables, stiff chair shots, and explosive piranhas in these bastardized sons of ECW was a curious fascination back in 05 when I was in my teens, but after seeing one explosive C4 up the ass match, you've seen them all, and I tired of them quickly.
Mouth called that match, actually, for FMW.
Oh, yes.
C4 explosive up the ass.
So you can only imagine that in 2014, when I enjoy wrestling that looks like it hurts worse than it actually hurts, as opposed to the other way around, I get very little enjoyment from these kind of matches. Fortunately, Joe versus Necro passed up on using light tubes, barbed wire, and explosive sea life like they were going out. Was there an actual piranha match?
I think I've seen a tape of it like years and years ago. It's like God. In Japan from the early 90s.
That's what I want to review.
Unfortunately for my 2014 viewing pleasure, it still went out for the hurts worse than it looks option. I went from a 1974 Broadway between Dory Jr. and Jack Briscoe, which featured prolonged holds, to Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher, which featured, thankfully, prolonged necro maiming, and you could probably guess which entertained me more. I know both were working, but that didn't mean I could throw my hands up and say, oh, that's fine, then bludgeon each other more. I only hope both were paid well, but they were working for Ian Rotten, so of course they were. The best way I can sum up with what I just watched is fucked up.
Oh, clever. Imran from Huddersfield in the UK. Hi, guys. Not been able to seek out any of the matches for this week's review away, but with the great news that Damian Abraham is going to be on the show again, if it's not 3 hours long, I want my money back.
Uh-oh.
Sorry. I'm a busy guy today. I couldn't pass on the opportunity to ask him a question or two. First off, I'm really enjoying Glass Boys, so congrats for making yet another fantastic record. And my two questions for you. Number one, how nervous do you get in the week and days leading up to a record release? How much do you worry about how the record will be received?
Well, thank you for the kind words. I get pretty nervous. I think this time I got more nervous because it was about myself this time as opposed to other times when it's about characters. I also, though, this time knew there would be more of a mixed reception for some reason. I just kind of felt like this was going to be a record that some people liked and some people didn't like. So there's even lyrics on the record about that and stuff. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I got – you get nervous, but, you know, it's almost like – it's not like another job where if you do X amount of work one time and then do X amount of work more the next time, your job will be that much better in some cases, you know? In this case, like, I tried harder on this record. That doesn't mean if people are going to like it any more or any less than the last record. So, you know, you get nervous, but there's also, like, a sense of it's going to happen however it happens. So.
Reviews so far?
Well, when I say mixed, they're all pretty positive. Some have been glowing. It's weird to go from the last record was just as like impossibly glowing to this, where there's like some people being like, yeah, I don't like this as much. And then some people really like it. So, you know, it's awesome. Like, I kind of just make the record and then hope that people that, you know, I share some commonality with as far as beliefs, interests, you know, stuff like that, liked it too. And then I'm like, well, you know what? Then it succeeded by my kind of metrics, because you'll drive yourself crazy trying to make other people's, perceptions of what your band is happy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I just kind of at this point, I think, have fairly resigned myself to, you know, we'll make this record. If people like it, awesome. If people don't, well, we're going to have to deal with it. And we're just lucky to be able to make another record.
Did you ever do that Daniel Bryan song?
Live? Well, or we no, do. No, just, oh, Generation? Yeah, we played it live, yeah. And actually, okay. At Field Trip the other day, Gord Downie and the Sadies covered that song on stage.
Really?
So now that makes it the best fucked up song ever. Just
wow.
Because
that's awesome.
It is like this weird thing. I'm watching the Sadies and Gord Downie, and I'm like, I know this riff. And then I'm like, is Gord Downie saying Generation? And then sure enough, they covered Generation.
They played your song.
Yeah, they covered our song. Yeah, on stage. Cool. So now it's like that song.
What's the etiquette for covering someone else's song? Like, is it considered just a tribute if someone does it, or
it varies? It varies depending on where you are. Funnily enough, in North America, like, that to me was the highest honor I could. You know, I was just like, the Sadies are great heroes of mine. Gord Downie, someone I've come to become a huge fan of in the last sort of few years. So, you know, to see that's a huge honor. In Japan, in hardcore, it's a massive diss. Oh, wow. And there's a story of
this. So, like, anyone can do this song, we're going to prove
it. Well, like, or we're doing your song better than you do it.
Oh,
is what
yeah.
it's looked upon. So, there's this band from North America. I think it was Artemis Pyle, but I don't want to be 100% on that. That went over there and covered the song by Gizem, this legendary Japanese band. And then one of the members of Gizem showed up the next show and tried to fight him over it.
Whoa.
Because it was like a sign of disrespect. Because it's, you know, their song yeah. and stuff like that. So, but here it's the etiquette is, you know, you do the cover of the song, and if it gets back to the person that you did it and they like it, it's awesome. So, you know, I don't think anyone in the Sadies or Gordani had any fear of me storming on stage and grabbing the mic from them.
And are there like royalties to be paid from doing covers? Like,
if you do a song on a record, I believe the royalty rate used to be 6 cents. On the Offspring Smash record, you know, with all the big hits from the 90s, they do a song of Killboy Powderhead, Powderhead, which is by The Digits. And Rick Sims from The Digits became not a millionaire, but very comfortable for a few years off the success of Smash because they had covered his song. Mm-hmm. He made, like, I think it was like 6 or 10 cents per album sold.
Wow.
And they sold 10, 20 million of that album or something insane. So he's doing all right.
All right, we got one last piece of feedback.
And this guy also said he's coming to watch you at the Belgrave Music Hall in Leeds next week.
Oh, amazing.
And
come say hi.
Track you down to chat about wrestling.
Absolutely.
All right, we go to finally Tim from Australia, who says, at the height of my tape trading days, I had a strange fascination with IWA Mid-South. It was always intriguing to me that in the midst of an ultra-violent blood and guts promotion, that there was also great wrestling matches and that fans not only accepted but appreciated the blend of two extremes. While this was obviously done in the past with ECW, I felt it was turned up another notch with IWA Mid-South. I had this tape in my arsenal once upon a time, but I have no idea where it is, so I only got around to rewatching Joe versus Butcher. It's the kind of match that could be the absolute best or worst in history, depending on who you ask. But personally, I enjoyed it. The clash of two styles of wrestling came together nicely with a lot of hard-hitting, smash-mouth wrestling that made Joe a household name on the indies at the time. While I'm here, I have a few questions for Damien. We'll just get to a couple. Being a record junkie, what's the most prized possession in your collection?
Oh, man. I think probably my Negative Approach test press with the rejected mix on it. I traded $400... $400 records in and took all the money and bought that one record
wow.
with it.
Wow.
It's something I'd wanted since I was a little kid and heard about the existence of.
And he also asked, you recommended the Gigi Allen Hayden documentary on MLW, and it got me thinking as to whether or not it bothers you that you're regularly compared to Gigi for your live shows, despite the only thing you guys have in common is the blood element with no fecal matter or shattered skulls, at least not yet.
Shattered skulls?
Yeah.
Fecal matter.
Oh, you got to see. You guys still haven't seen Hayden?
No.
Oh.
I don't think I want to.
You got to see Hayden. You got to see Hayden. I described it on the MLW podcast. Gigi Allen makes Necro Butcher look like John Cena. The stuff Gigi does on stage.
Oh, I remember you talking
about the most extreme. And it is, yeah, like, thank you for saying that because it used to really bother me. Now it's like, I know people are going to assume whatever they're going to assume about me. And I'm just happy that there's some people that, you know, look past that, like yourself, and are willing to take the time to inquire if it does bother me. But yeah, like, it does bother me because I would never want to hurt anyone at the show. If I get hurt, that's one thing. I would never throw my shit into someone's face and then punch him. Like,
how would you do that? Would he just shit on stage?
He would shit on stage.
It? Wow.
It's crazy. He would take laxatives before he went out.
The process.
And you've got to see this movie, Hate It. It is unreal.
Yo, you're doing a great job selling it.
Oh, it is a date movie, John. Go back with the wife. Throw on Hated. It'll blow some minds.
Where can you watch this? Is it on Netflix?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, it's on YouTube.
It's all on YouTube. It's the whole thing.
We got a review for next week.
Yeah, this will be – if you guys ever go back to reviewing non-wrestling things again – like, remember way back when? Did you guys do some non-wrestling stuff? For the anniversary show, I thought, one year? You used to do the review.
We did Ask Away, which was...
You did Ask Away, but then you also did the review Jersey Shore.
That's true.
And then you also did something else back around then, too. I remember there being some other non-wrestling thing that you guys reviewed.
Maybe Spider-Man?
No, it was all the WWE Pitcher stuff, maybe is what I'm confused with. Oh, and then also the Superior Spider-Man, too. So,
That as well.
Gigi Allen Hated.
All right. Well... thanks, everyone, for your feedback. Some great questions from people. We are, unfortunately, out of time here.
I will come back as soon as you guys will have me because I didn't get to any of the wrestling stories.
Oh, we're gonna build it all up.
Ugh.
And then it'll be a big powder keg the next time you come on. But let people know about the album and anything you'd like to promote. Our listeners want to support Fucked Up.
Oh, thank you once again to you guys for having me. Thank you to listeners for listening. I love the community here, and I love meeting people that come to the shows. We're going on tour in Europe, going on tour in North America. Check your local listings. We have a record out in stores. Buy it if you feel inclined, but you can stream it online first before you decide to buy it.
No. You got to buy it.
Where do people stream it?
Pitchfork.com, I believe, has a stream up still. I think a couple other sites have streams up here and there. But, yeah, check it out if you're so inclined. But, once again, thank you two for suffering through shitty wrestling to keep all of us listeners entertained.
I hope we keep your tour, the downtime, entertaining for
absolutely.
You. That's what we do this for.
And you know what? This is what I love you for.
You can follow him at Left for Damien on Twitter and check out the album. Wait for next week. I had an idea of something to do. I feel that we're at a low point right now in TNA right now. Okay. And I mentioned it. Samoa Joe's debut in TNA. I want to go back to a time that I really look back fondly upon TNA, and that would be TNA Slammiversary 2005 featuring Samoa Joe's debut. I really feel 2005 was the zenith of this promotion.
Oh, so just the week after this show?
1 week, 8 days after this particular show.
Oh, perfect.
Let's go back and take a look at Slammiversary, because next week we'll be coming off of this year's Slammiversary, and I want to find a ray of hope by going to the past to hopefully shed something to the future. That's what I'm going to try and do. It's basically rehab that we're going to go through next week.
Yes. 10 years ago, TNA, you were awesome.
You are not any longer. So go to liveaudiowrestling.com, iTunes, Stitcher, at Way0937, at I am John Pollock, and we'll be back later this week. Damien, you mentioned numerous songs. What should we go out with here?
I think if we're going to go out with any song, probably something by the Foreign Objects. Have we ever played Wrestling Is Real when I've been on the show? I was looking.
Is this easy to find?
It might be. I think it's on YouTube. But if not, Wrestling Is Real. I kind of want to think of something really violent and that has something to do with wrestling. Maybe something by Anti-Scene. But their other songs are about specific wrestlers. God, I'm buying time, everyone, so John can look up Foreign Objects. Wrestling Is Real. It's the name of the LP. They are a great band from West New Hampshire somewhere. Did a cool LP, a cool 7-inch. Anything?
The Foreign Objects. Wrestling Is Real.
Boom.
Let's go out with that. Thank you for listening, everyone. Damien, we'll do this again very soon.
I cannot wait.
Nice.
129.
Awesome.
That's how we do.
Thank you, guys.
Gentlemen, it worked like a charm. The rest is up to you. Some people think that wrestling's fake, but I know wrestling's true. What's the deal? Would you squeal if I told you that wrestling's real? What's the deal? Would you squeal if I told you that wrestling's real? Each wrestler does. What's the deal? Would you squeal if I told you that wrestling's real? Each wrestler is pretty neat. Opponents try to beat. They bash on every geek. I know they never cheat. What's the deal? Would you squeal if I told you that wrestling's real? What's the deal? Would you squeal if I told you wrestling's real? What's the deal? Would you squeal
if I told you that wrestling's real? What's the deal? Would you squeal? If I told you that wrestling's real? Hockey is fake. Baseball is fake. Football is fake. Boxing is thrown. Tennis is rigged. Highlight is fake. Basketball's fake. But wrestling's real. Every last minute of it.